I'm thinking like, I'm a doctor. I call my friend and ask him if he wants to help me start a practice. And now here I am, you know, a year later, and I have like this completely different thing.
Like, one characteristic emerged as a significant predictor of success. It was grit.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of Made with Grit. We took a couple weeks off, but we're back with another guest episode. This time, speaking with the CEO of Modern Pediatrics, Andy O'Hara. Andy, welcome.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining. So I guess a quick background on how I know Andy. I did a little bit of contract work for you it's been 3 years ago now?
Yeah, I think that's right.
That seems kind of long ago, but yeah, back when we first started Ad Reform, I was picking up some work on the side, and I think I found you guys like through Upwork. We connected and
that's right.
Ended up doing some cool like sort of projects for you and stayed in touch and did a few more things about a year and a half ago. But a lot has changed on your professional work, on your work side. So figured we could catch up and hear what your journey has been. But yeah, if you want to give a quick intro about what you were doing before and what you're doing now, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, my last company, you know, that we worked together on was called Chiron Health. We're founded back in 2013, telemedicine software company. And yeah, built that up over, you know, about 5 years, were acquired in late 2018. And now I'm jumping into a new venture in still in the healthcare space in pediatrics called Modern Pediatrics. And we can kind of get into that as well here. But yeah, I'm sort of former finance guy turned, you know, healthcare entrepreneur now.
Yeah, I'm definitely, we've been kind of chatting back and forth over the past year or so. And I guess there was a period between Chiron and Modern Pediatrics during which you were learning to code. Is that?
That's right.
Like, I know we talked about it because I kind of worked with you a little bit on some stuff, but what was the motivation to get into it and kind of where do you see it going for you as a developer now?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately the motivation was, you know, at Chiron, you know, we didn't have a technical founder, right? And it was always frustrating to me that everything I kind of wanted to test out or hack on or whatever, like I had to, you know, kind of push through the normal, you know, product pipeline, which is in general a good, you know, good thing to have that, yeah, that sort of discipline there. But
sure,
you know, I wanted to test stuff out and hack on stuff. Like, you know, some of the projects we worked on together was basically that, you know, sort of the out of band stuff, you know, kind of the weekend hacking, if you will, that I couldn't really do myself. And so, you know, after the acquisition, I was like, you know what, I'm going to take a year at the very least and learn enough to be dangerous, right? And, you know, kind of working on that project, you know, that contract project that we did together, you know, was sort of the early days of that. Obviously, you were sort of my coach, right? I was writing most of the code and it was sort of enough to, you know, throw me into the deep end, you know, on a Rails project like that. And yeah, I've sort of never looked back since. Just had a ton of fun, you know, over the last year learning to code and, you know, sort of learned enough to essentially be the technical founder for Modern Pediatrics now. So
yeah, that's amazing. I mean, I was catching up on, I guess, going from learning to code, I guess, a little over a year ago, starting out, and then now being the technical co-founder of a business. Like, I guess maybe that wasn't the stated goal, but it's like, I assume can you recognize that feeling of, oh, you're actually here now? Or does it feel kind of more of stepwise iterative and not some massive leap you've taken?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been iterative having, you know, kind of in the last year working on a few projects and just, you know, gotten a little more experience with each of them. And, you know, feels like if you keep things relatively simple, you know, from a technical standpoint, it's not crazy for, you know, a relatively new developer to, you know, be able to build and maintain, you know, a workable application, right? That's a pretty good user experience as well, right? And for what we're doing, it's not crazy, right? Modern Pediatrics is, you know, essentially, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, medical practice, pediatrics practice. We can get into, you know, kind of exactly what we're doing, but, you know, ultimately, you know, the technical side is not, you know, some crazy lift. I'm using a lot of, you know, kind of best in class off the shelf tools for, you know, components of what we're doing as well. So I'm not having to kind of build everything myself. So yeah, it feels all, you know, pretty doable, even having only been coding for, you know, kind of a year, year and a half now.
For sure. Yeah. And I guess I know when we first started, I guess at Chiron, going back to that point when you left,
yep.
I know the tech side had gotten a little more complicated. They were doing what, Elixir and stuff, I think. And
that's right. Yeah.
When we first started together, you were like kind of talking about different things to explore. And I imposed my opinions about, you know, keeping it like really basic, but
that's right.
Which I'm glad kind of stuck, but selfishly, but I'm curious to get like your thoughts on, I guess, what your experience has been, especially learning where you're probably, you're reading a lot of content around development. And a lot of that typically tends to be what's the new hot thing. And what has that experience been like? And kind of how have you stayed focused on just kind of keeping things simple?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think a lot of our, you know, kind of early conversations, you know, call it a year ago or even a little more than a year ago, you know, sort of influenced me on this. And yeah, I mean, initially, you know, our engineers at Chiron had been moving, you know, a lot of the new aspects of the product over to Elixir and ended up doing, you know, an Elixir Udemy course and thought it was cool. And, you know, I was sort of doing a lot of research to kind of decide like, what is the tech stack that I'm going to try to learn first here? And, you know, ultimately did land on Rails just because there's such a big Rails community out there. Everything essentially has been figured out. And like, yeah, some people have, you know, had their nits to pick on certain aspects of Rails. In general, you know, a lot is kind of done for you, right? And then as I started, you know, writing more code, you know, for example, kind of getting into just adding more JavaScript and more kind of, you know, polished user experiences with, you know, another project I was working on last year. It was great. I was having a lot of fun, but very quickly realized like, oh man, the complexity balloons, right? Anytime, you know, you're dealing with sort of a JavaScript heavy application. And I wasn't even using, you know, kind of React or any of these new frameworks. I was, you know, just, you know, adding some jQuery in there. And, you know, pretty quickly it became like, okay, you know, this is nice, but this will be very, very difficult for just me, you know, to maintain going forward here. So just a few of those experiences of like dabbling with some, you know, some different technologies, you know, over the last year and ultimately deciding for, you know, for modern pediatrics, like the only way I'm going to be able to do this, you know, as kind of the sole technical person and someone who has, you know, other responsibilities in the business, obviously as the CEO as well, I got to keep it really, really, really simple. And I think there will be, you know, there will be an opportunity down the line, you know, to be able to handle more complexity from a technical standpoint. But, you know, it was just sort of decision was made that the only way this is going to work with just me is to keep things dead simple and, you know, kind of use the out of the box, you know, sort of Rails way to do things for, you know, as much as possible, essentially.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I definitely agree. And as I'm sure you saw at Chiron, like over time, it's going to get more complicated, most likely just by default. So it's like, might as well start simple and try to preserve that to the extent that you can. And you obviously have the power to choose. So why not just choose what is easy for you? So I was glad to hear that because it's sometimes hard to resist
sure.
the outside forces trying to drive you to like, and there's obviously learning. There's a goal, you know, if you're trying to learn new things, you know, can be useful even just for pulling different approaches or concepts. So it's not to say like never learn anything new, but I think for me, at least, I think having like trying to keep as many things out of the mix as possible is has generally been pretty effective.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me too, like just sort of learning all the ins and outs of Rails is all brand new for me, right? So
sure.
I've still been getting kind of that learning aspect.
Totally. And there's definitely a learning curve just for like revisiting code you wrote, you know, 2 years ago or something. Like some of that you just can't, it requires time and then you revisit and you're like, wow, this didn't make sense. Or maybe there's new, better ways of doing this. But yeah, no, I'm glad to hear that. So like, I guess, how long have you been at it with modern pediatrics on like I guess, both the business, but also the platform?
Yeah. So yeah, Modern Pediatrics sort of came about last fall. A friend of mine that was a pediatrician in Chicago, grew up with the guy, played in a band with him for years, one of my best friends. He had, you know, called me up and basically just said, hey, you know, I'm thinking about leaving my practice in Chicago and, you know, want to start my own practice. You know, are you interested in joining me to run kind of the business side of things? So that was, you know, call it August, September last year. And first I wasn't, you know, super excited about, you know, running a medical practice.
A bit of a departure from the technology space.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I was like, look, there's, you know, I am interested if we, you know, if we come up with, you know, a higher growth, more sort of technology driven, you know, angle here that can, you know, kind of significantly improve on the, you know, the status quo of pediatric practices, right? So we started kicking the concept around, you know, and ultimately kind of landed on the concept for Modern Pediatrics, which is, you know, in-home pediatric primary care. So all the visits happening in the patient's home, sort of paired with, you know, 24/7 telemedicine access. So, you know, chat and video chat there. And at that point, you know, I started kind of shifting focus from the other project I had been working on and started building the Modern Pediatrics platform. So that was probably, you know, that's probably September. Yeah. Late September, early October of last year that I, you know, started on, you know, on the tech platform there.
Okay. Nice. I didn't realize it was, I guess that I'm trying to remember the timeline of our conversations, but I guess that time is just hard to figure out, especially in the middle of quarantine life. But
yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So you said before we got on, we were talking and you said you officially launched April 1.
That's right. Yep.
So what, I guess you started working on it, kind of dabbling on it back in October. And then what happened in the middle? Like, what was the experience from that to now?
Sure. Yeah. So it turns out there's, you know, kind of a lot of things you have to, you know, put in place to actually see patients, right? There's the licensing side. So, you know, my co-founder, Dr. Porter, you know, licensed in Illinois, not in Texas. So that was one of the early things we needed to do is, you know, kind of start the process of getting this Texas medical license. And then, you know, all the insurance company contracts as well, that takes kind of a long time. So originally we had actually planned on, you know, running kind of brick and mortar practices, right? So kind of the initial timeline was like, okay, if we can open our first practice in Austin, you know, sometime, you know, kind of late fall, you know, 2020, we'd be pretty happy about that. But as we kind of looked at that more and we, you know, ultimately decided, you know what, like we do not want to go the brick and mortar route. We want to go all in home. You know, the timeline accelerated pretty dramatically. We're like, actually, let's essentially launch as quickly as we can. Obviously we need the proper, you know, licensing and malpractice insurance. And, you know, we need to get our, you know, insurance company contracts in place, but sort of all of that accelerated pretty significantly. But it gave, you know, gave me, you know, from a development standpoint, gave me enough time to, you know, build kind of the first iteration of the tech platform. You know, again, I'm still a relatively new developer. So, you know, it was kind of nice having a little bit of a time cushion there while all of these other kind of administrative things were being figured out, you know, to be able to take my time a little bit and, you know, kind of build that tech, sort of research and decide on, you know, what some of the third party kind of off the shelf tools would be, you know, what to build, what not to build. That was sort of the process from, you know, the time we first started talking about it and I started sort of tinkering with the code to, you know, the time we launched on April 1st, essentially.
Yeah. And I guess you mentioned shifting from like brick and mortar concept to, I guess, digital is obviously, I'm sure in this moment that feels like a really good call, but given that this is being recorded on what, June 2nd in the middle of coronavirus kind of new normal. So yeah. I don't know where the timeline is, but like, was that part of a factor or was it kind of like you were shifting out of that mode just for other reasons at the same time? And it just happened to work out that way.
Yeah. So we actually made the call on the in-home model, you know, before coronavirus became a, serious thing, you know, in the US at least, right? So I think, trying to think back to exactly when that decision was made, but that decision was made sometime late last year, actually.
Okay. And that was just due to, like, the world is obviously shifting in that direction. And there's a lot more, I assume, a lot more. I can't even imagine trying to, like, lock down some sort of space and work through all the details of that. So
it sort of evolved, right? So originally it was, all right, we want to do the brick and mortars. And then as we were thinking about it, it was like, okay, you know, the timeline on sort of the build out of that could be a little bit variable. So we, you know, our sweet spot is newborns, right? And you know, these newborns can be born, you know, up to a couple months before their actual due date. So we're thinking through, like, how do we kind of handle that if kids come early that have signed up, you know, with Modern Pediatrics? How do we handle that? And we're like, ooh, actually, we can just do house calls, right? We can just do house calls until, you know, the practice opens, the physical location opens. And then as we thought more about it, we're like, oh man, that's actually really, really interesting. We think that could be a way, way better patient experience, you know, to have the pediatrician, you know, coming into the home. And then as we started talking to more and more potential customers, it became clear, like, oh yeah, if we can figure out how to make the logistics and the economics of that in-home model work, we might really be on to something, right? And also, as I, you know, as I modeled it too, right? I come from a finance background, so I spent a lot of time, you know, in my Excel model, sort of working through the economics of what that looks like. And it's sort of interesting, right? It's, you can't see nearly as many patients in a day as you can with a physical location, right? We think, we don't know exactly where that tops out sort of per provider, but it's probably somewhere around 10 visits a day versus, you know, Dr. Tim was seeing sometimes up to 30, even close to 40 patients in a day, you know, at their busiest times, you know, in the clinic, right?
So yeah, it's like a massive drop.
It is. But you don't have sort of all of the overhead, right?
Totally.
Of, you know, of these medical practices. And part of it for me was like, okay, we think that the in-home model sort of represents, you know, an order of magnitude improvement in the patient experience, right? Which, if executed well, you know, could lead to sort of a high growth situation there. And man, oh man, if we don't have to open brick and mortar locations with, you know, $500,000 to $1 million sort of build out costs per location, if you're going to make it nice, man, we can move so much quicker and be much less dependent on outside capital. Just the capital intensity of this business goes way, way, way down.
Totally.
If you don't have sort of that real estate component there. So at the end of the day, it was like, okay, we really like this model. It's just better in a lot of ways. Can we get comfortable with, you know, sort of the economics and the logistics required to support that? And ultimately, as I modeled it, it was like, yeah, I think we can. It's not easy. This isn't, you know, pediatrics is not a super high margin business anyway. And the fact that we're, you know, going to be seeing a lot fewer patients in a day sort of per provider, you know, really makes it a challenge. But, you know, it looks like, yeah, absolutely. This is something with the right technology in place that's totally doable.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm thinking as you're talking though, like, so I can see the evolution of the idea, but it's, if I think about it from your co-founder's perspective, who I don't know, I've never met, but I'm thinking like, I'm a doctor, I call my friend and ask him if he wants to help me start a practice. And now here I am, you know, a year later, and I have like this completely different thing. Like, I can see why that makes sense to you, but I'm curious like what kind of how his approach toward it has evolved and what kind of different perspectives he's had on the topic.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's funny you bring that. I mean, it is a radically different concept than he had originally envisioned, but you know, ultimately, like, he's a phenomenal doctor, phenomenal communicator. And the reason, you know, the reason he reached out to me to, you know, collaborate on this, you know, with him was the fact that, you know, sort of that was my area of expertise, is sort of leveraging, you know, technology and different business models and, you know, and everything. So, you know, honestly, as the concept shifted, I mean, it was sort of collaborative along, you know, along the way, right? So it wasn't me, you know, sort of pushing for this radically different model and him sort of resisting. No, it was, I mean, sort of we were, you know, step by step, you know, sort of evolving the concept together, which was really fun.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking of it like if the goal for him is to, you know, just do his thing, like it's a different approach and obviously a completely different business. But like at the end of the day, you're like doing the work you actually want to do. So it does work on that level, right? I mean,
Yeah, that's right. I mean, at the end of the day, like, look, you know, he's trying to have sort of the, you know, the biggest positive impact on patients, you know, as possible. And, you know, there's a lot of ways to skin that cat. And I think this one's, you know, certainly different than kind of the traditional private practice model. But hey, if we can make this work and scale it, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah. And it couldn't feel like a better decision, I assume, at this point. But you mentioned kind of keeping costs lower. And I don't remember if we talked about it, touched on it, but I know Chiron was like venture backed. And obviously a pediatrics practice is not exactly like a zero overhead software company or anything. So sure. I'm curious. And I guess before we hit record, you had mentioned that you guys had worked on some initial funding. So I'm curious to hear like what that has been like going through it again and how you thinking about it differently or the same or both.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, there are a couple things that, you know, that we're approaching very, very differently from the way, you know, Chiron operated. I think the biggest thing, honestly, is, you know, having sort of a direct path to profitability or sustainability sort of right from the start. You know, with Chiron, you know, honestly, like the most runway we ever had was like, I don't know, 7 or 8 months, right? And most of the time we were operating with, you know, call it 3 to 5 months of runway, right? Uh-huh. For 5 years, right? So I was constantly fundraising, and it was, you know, it was tough. I mean, it was distraction, obviously, from kind of the core operations of the business, but it just, you know, it was just a really tough thing to sort of constantly be behind the eight ball and sort of reliant on outside capital for your survival, right? And, you know, so I look at like how we got there. I mean, it sort of started, you know, with the lack of a technical founding team, right? Like from the start, we ended up paying a lot of money in sort of contract development just to get our initial platform built, and, you know, felt like the right decision at the time. We didn't really have any other, you know, choice given, you know, kind of given the structure of our team. But that just started us down this path of raising capital and increasing burn. You know, every time we raise, we, you know, hire more people and increase burn and all of that. And it just sort of turned into this cycle of heavy reliance on, you know, outside investors. So that's sort of the biggest, you know, the biggest thing. It's really sort of the two pieces. One, having kind of one of the founders at least building the product, right?
For sure.
And doing this in a way that we don't need to hire a bunch of people. Right now it's just, you know, just the two of us. And, you know, we've raised some, you know, kind of friends and family / angel money and done a little bit of debt financing. But now as an organization, we have more runway than we ever had at Chiron.
That's crazy.
Right. And God, that feels good. Just having that cushion and not, you know, constantly whenever money is raised, you know, burn increases sort of proportionally. That I would say is sort of the biggest difference in, you know, in kind of the approach. And, you know, not to say that we don't want to go the venture backed, you know, route. We do. I just think we're going to be in a better position if we're always within striking distance of profitability and sustainability, right?
I think that's something that's, I guess, sometimes talked about, but is sometimes lost in the, you know, bootstrap versus institutional capital argument or whatever. It's kind of like, it's not, obviously it's more nuanced than that. And especially now there's other finance, like you mentioned, a lot more. I mean, there's always been some sort of debt financing, but it's gotten more popular. There's more options there. There's even more options on the like kind of pseudo VC, indie VC sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, I think that for me, that's what for some reason has always been my sort of angle on it, is it's more about if you're not a sustainable business, like seeing a path to sustainability and kind of working with that direction, which sounds absurd to even say that that's like a novel concept, but oh, it'd be cool to have a business that can survive on its own. Apparently that's not a given, but I think that's, like you said, then taking VC becomes a tool as opposed to like this lifeline that you have to keep reaching out to. So
yeah, no, absolutely. Like just having gone through, you know, the process of fundraising from a position, you know, in a lot of ways in a position of weakness, right? They know you need the money, right? to survive. Taking a look at the model or anything, like it's pretty clear. I'd love to, you know, kind of flip the script, right? And be in a position where, you know what, we really don't need, we can take funding opportunistically versus, you know, out of necessity. And I think, you know, I think that's actually a huge, huge distinction there.
Yeah, totally. And also what's weird is, and I've never raised money, like VC money, we kind of went through some smaller scale things at the company I worked for before we started Ad Reform, but I wasn't really like, I was sort of involved on the tech side a little bit, but that was it. So, but I think what's weird about it too is that, at least from the outside, it's like they know you need the money and then you get more money, but then the goal of the money is to keep spending even more money. Like, as you were saying, it's sort of this treadmill effect, and it's just kind of this weird like combination, I guess. It's cool to hear your take on it, but I guess I'm curious too. So like, it sounds like you guys had some financing needs just from the nature of the work and the business. What has it been like kind of going through that, A, with a different mindset, like looking for different things, but also in the middle of, I assume, maybe you started a little earlier, but like as coronavirus started taking over, like did that impact your journey at all from that standpoint?
Yeah. So we started sort of raising our kind of angel friends and family around like just as, you know, coronavirus was becoming, you know, a huge, huge thing. So in a lot of ways, timing could not have been worse there. You know, a couple things. One, I mean, because we are a medical practice, like medical practice debt financing was available to us, which was pretty cool. Obviously, a little bit harder for, you know, for a brand new software company to raise debt, you know, almost unheard of to be able to do that kind of at the early stages. So, you know, I viewed that as sort of a hedge, honestly. Like, okay, you know what? I don't know what this fundraising environment's going to look like here. Probably not going to be great. So yeah, it looks like, you know, we can get some debt financing. We're going to go ahead and do that. And then, yeah, I mean, well, a couple of things. One, we were trying to raise a ton of money, right? We had, you know, kind of structured things in such a way that we could run super, super lean and mean, just us as founders, you know, for the first phase of the business, right? To just prove out A, the demand, and B, that, you know, the economics of doing this in the home could work, right? So I tried to structure things in such a way that, okay, with a little bit of debt financing and a little bit of, you know, kind of angel money, we would have sort of plenty of runway to figure stuff out and prove what we need to prove early on, right? So I think the fact that I wasn't going out right off the bat and trying to raise, you know, $500,000 or $1 million+ on no traction, you know, sort of made it feel a lot more doable. But it, you know, turned out that it wasn't, you know, the pandemic didn't seem to, you know, impact things too much. You know, certainly there were people I reached out to that, you know, when I started reaching out to investors, it was like right as the markets were tanking, right?
Yeah.
So
that's just what the email they wanted in their inbox is like, oh, who's this guy?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, I got a number of people sort of brushed me off on that front, just like, hey, you know, rethinking my, you know, entire, you know, kind of an investment approach right now, which is totally fair. But, you know, there were enough other people that really liked the concept and, you know, sort of weren't as sensitive to, you know, kind of near-term market fluctuations that were like, you know what? Yeah, you know, this is something that I can see being a really interesting long-term play. I can get behind it. Valuation is reasonable. You're not asking for, you know, a ton of money here. So yeah, ultimately, you know, ultimately it kind of worked out pretty well, raising, you know, just enough angel money paired with the debt to put us in a position of like, okay, we got plenty of runway. We got plenty of cushion here, you know, to figure this out, and, you know, enough dry powder to, you know, sort of invest opportunistically as, you know, as we see fit without, you know, burning down all of our cash and getting in a tough position from the start.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, I was thinking too, like the pandemic, obviously not the environment you'd probably want to be raising money in, but but for someone who's done it, I don't even know how many times at Chiron and for much higher amounts with like a burn rate through the roof, I assume in some ways that makes it just makes it feel less difficult. Like if I were to set out to do it, I've never done it. So it'd probably be a lot of like, oh, this feels hard. And especially in a and I'm just like, I hate cold emailing people anyway. So
yeah. Right.
So it'd probably be like, this is very, very hard. Whereas for you, did it feel like this is kind of like, you know, you've been through a lot harder things in terms of like having a team on the line and having massive dollar amounts.
Yeah, I think that's right. And just having some friendlies to reach out to as well, right? Not starting from scratch, right? God, I remember the first, you know, the first money, you know, that we brought in with Chiron. I mean, I was literally kind of building those relationships from scratch. Whereas now, you know, I've met a ton of people over the years. I've built good relationships with, you know, a bunch of people over the years, both angel investors and kind of other industry folks and everything. So, I mean, just having a network, like it's pretty obvious, but just having a little bit of a network to start from, you know, makes all the difference for sure. Yeah.
I mean, that makes a ton of sense. Did you notice anyone, like something else I was just thinking is, so on one hand, obviously market economic woes might be kind of making people pause and put a hold on things. But at the same time, what you're doing, it's obviously in the healthcare space and it's based around not going to a like a healthcare facility. So like, did you hear people saying like, this is actually perfect timing? Like I'm gonna have it like almost the opposite reaction of like, I should definitely get down on this because it feels like it's never been a better time.
I mean, maybe a little bit. I mean, honestly, it was, you know, kind of the COVID benefit, if you will, was a little bit more, has been a little bit more from kind of a customer standpoint, right? We've had, you know, a number of signups that kind of specifically call out like, hey, we do not want to be going into the clinic for visits, but we want to make sure, you know, we stay up to date on our vaccines and everything. So a little bit less, I can't recall any, you know, any of our, you know, kind of early investors that specifically were like, you know what, this is a COVID related bet that I want to make. I think most were of the view that like, hey, yeah, you'll probably see a little bit of a bump from COVID, you know, how sustainable is, you know, is that benefit, you know, kind of TBD, but I more broadly, I believe in, you know, kind of the you know, in-home model.
Yeah. I mean, you guys were coming to that conclusion regardless. So obviously that's where things are moving.
That's right. Yep.
So I guess you're in Austin now. What do you see happening for the next, I don't know, it's hard to even say in this environment, but are you all focusing on building up more technology or are you looking to expand your footprint on the map? Or I guess what's kind of the focus at this point now that you've got the funding locked down?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, basically, you know, basically kind of proving out the logistics of this, right? So, you know, initially we were planning on launching in like a pretty small area of just a few zip codes in Austin, right? So we could, you know, keep the logistics really, really tight and not have Tim kind of in the car all day, right? But did just a ton of research around, you know, kind of zip code by zip code demographics, you know, using a bunch of census data to try to decide, you know, like where we launch in the city is a big deal, right? And ultimately kind of shifted our approach a little bit so we can cover, you know, most of Central Austin with just Tim, which seems a little bit crazy, but the way we structured things from, you know, kind of a logistics standpoint and our tech is supporting that, basically we're able to kind of cluster appointments, you know, geographically, and we have actually a ton of visibility into, you know, kind of when certain appointments need to happen, right? As soon as the baby is born, we know for the next 18 years, essentially the target week for all of their well child visits, right?
Yeah, that's a pretty great, I've never really thought about it, like from a logistics standpoint. I've obviously been on the other side as a parent, but
that's right.
Yeah, it's like, oh, this is actually, I mean, there's going to be obviously kind of outside, out of band things, but like you can pretty much put on the calendar like when people are coming, I guess.
Yep. No, exactly right. And it's, you know, you'll know this as a parent. I mean, it's like, you know, most people take these visits really seriously, right? And are perfectly fine scheduling them way out in advance. And, you know, it's not the kind of appointment that gets canceled super frequently. You know, people are much more likely to cancel, you know, their own doctor's appointments than their kids, especially if vaccines are involved, right? So yeah, I mean, basically, you know, in the next, call it year, we're, you know, building out Dr. Porter's patient panel. We don't know exactly where that kind of tops out, but it's probably, we think it's probably somewhere around 500 patients, right? So, you know, we're trying to keep the service area kind of tight enough that that's doable while I, you know, sort of build the tech to make the logistics of that, you know, work really well. And then once we're kind of comfortable with how all that's operating, you know, the next step is really to expand to the broader Austin metro area, right? So we're covering, you know, a good chunk of central Austin, but you've got, you know, sort of north of us or Round Rock as well. You've got a fairly large area in the broader metro that we're not covering all of yet, right? So the idea would be to, you know, first phase, you know, kind of validate the demand is there, validate sort of the logistics and the economics of that with, you know, with Dr. Tim, run things super lean and mean. And then at that point, you know, maybe go out and raise, you know, sort of a larger seed round, call it, you know, a couple $1 million, expand to, you know, the broader Austin metro area, prove out this playbook can be sort of replicated. It's not just Tim who's, you know, an excellent provider, like the, you know, kind of the system needs to be replicable for all this to work, right? So I think that's sort of the phase two. What does timing look like there exactly? You know, TBD.
Yeah, you have some padding to figure that part out, I guess.
That's right. And I wanted a bunch of padding to figure that part out. And if we want to be a little bit more aggressive because, you know, signups are accelerating and everything, and we're seeing a bunch of demand, say, you know, up north on, you know, kind of the Round Rock side of things, like to be able to, you know, hire that next provider without, you know, again, putting us in kind of a precarious financial situation there. So,
yeah. So you mentioned like signups and kind of proving things out. What has the sign, like, how has the launch been? And what, I guess, what have you found? It's very early, but kind of what have you seen in terms of like acquiring users and stuff? What's been your go-to for the early days?
Yeah. So, you know, it was interesting. One of the things that my co-founder Tim did a lot of at his practice in Chicago that worked really well was teaching prenatal classes, right? So, you know, he taught a CPR class, an infant CPR class, a breastfeeding class, a sleep class, and we really liked that. So we started doing these classes in Austin, and initially we were doing, you know, at a physical location, at a birthing center, but with the pandemic pretty quickly, that had to all move to Zoom classes, right? So, you know, for the last couple months, we've been running these Zoom classes 3 days a week, and the reception's just been awesome.
That's awesome. I didn't do all of those. Probably should do some of those, but it took a pandemic. But if they have like remote ones, I would be much, it's just for me, it's so much a better way to do it because I can kind of fit it into my schedule more easily. So that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the case for, you know, for a lot of people. So we've been running these classes and the reception's been really positive. People have gotten it, you know, it's like, you know, he's essentially giving you a preview of what it's like to work with him as a doctor, right? He's sharing the same types of information that he's going to be sharing with you in a visit. And reception has been really good. So we actually kind of tightened things up and formalized a broader 6-class full kind of comprehensive newborn curriculum that's actually launching today.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yep. So they're all Zoom classes. And yeah, so that's been fun. Like he's an educator, you know, deep down. So this is just a natural fit. And we're finding it's a great way to kind of connect with families and sort of build relationships in like a pretty efficient way. And we're seeing a lot of people, you know, from those classes reach out and, you know, sign up for, you know, for the service, right?
I was curious, have you considered, and it might not work well since it sounds like a lot of the value is like that personal connection, but yep. Have you ever considered like kind of making it into a course that you just is delivered, you know, via YouTube or via however?
Sort of on demand, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We've been thinking about it for sure. And we'll see ultimately kind of where that goes. I think the live aspect is cool because people can ask questions you know, in real time, obviously.
And it's so early that it's like, you can do it. It's not like you're running into massive time constraints, I would assume, at this point. Although it would be nice to have that time back, but, you know.
Yeah, that's true. But it's, you know, it's 3 hours a week, basically. We've gotten really efficient with, you know, kind of the, you know, the setup and the prep and everything. So it's not like we have to be, you know, kind of prepping for production an hour beforehand or anything like that. Like it's more efficient than that. So we'll see. Yeah. I mean, ultimately my vision for this, Tim's vision for this as well, is like pediatrics, and you've probably experienced this, you know, with your kids so far. It's, you know, a lot of it is just sharing, you know, kind of standard information with folks in a way that's really, really digestible, and sort of simplifying this, you know, this scary unknown, and kind of cutting through a lot of the, you know, oftentimes conflicting information out there, you know, on the web. So we feel like, you know, sort of this content play, this education play is really central to, you know, to what we're doing. So the classes are certainly the first phase of that. And we've been doing, you know, tons and tons of, you know, kind of written content in our resource center, and, you know, making that available to patients at the right time, you know, before visits, after visits, kind of all of that. So yeah, I mean, what form does this ultimately take? I would be, you know, I'd be surprised if there, you know, if there isn't, you know, a decent amount of kind of on-demand video content in addition to, you know, some of the live classes, you know, that we do. But that's been, you know, it's interesting. Like that was something that really has gone back several years. Like Dr. Tim had been an advisor to Chiron, and we had been, you know, kind of working on, you know, kind of content related stuff with him, you know, a little bit there. That was sort of part of the broader vision. Like, you know, there's no sort of gold standard, you know, pediatrics content out there, really.
A bunch of onesie twosie sort of like blogs and...
Yeah, and so, no, I mean, don't get me wrong. There's good content, like the American Academy of Pediatrics has their healthychildren.org site that, you know, has a ton of good stuff for sure. But like, is there like, you know, a trusted, you know, YouTube personality pediatrician out there that's like, oh yeah, you go to this guy, you watch this. There really isn't. We're like, man, that's pretty cool. Tim's really got kind of a knack for that stuff. So that was always something that we wanted to, you know, sort of incorporate into the service, essentially.
Yeah. As you were saying that, I'm thinking about like my experience as a parent. Like, it's funny because my typical move when I'm like trying to learn something is obviously I just like Google it, start reading stuff, watching videos, whatever. But it's funny with this because I'll still do that, but there's something about having this person that you kind of know, and you have this human, like this face, this person who's obviously an expert on the topic, who can probably tell you the same thing you just read, but having this actual human telling you that you trust is so key, even as silly as it sounds, like relative to other fields. So it makes a lot of sense that like the content, like you're almost building out like relationships and then providing the same content through the relationship channel. So it's like, oh, cool, I get this content and now I trust it. So
that's right. And that, I mean, that trust factor is huge, right? And, you know, I think, again, there's tons of content out there. The problem is when it's conflicting, that becomes so frustrating for folks. It's just like not knowing what to trust and what not to trust. So, you know, gosh, if we can have sort of a consistent narrative that cuts across what you're hearing in, you know, in your pediatric visits, as well as, you know, what you're reading as you're kind of researching this stuff on your own, I feel like that combination is pretty powerful, right?
Yeah, that's awesome. It's funny too to hear, obviously I don't know much about this field from your side of it. So it's interesting to hear about like how you generate leads in a pediatrics practice, but the classes, like now I'm like thinking of like, next time I go to a class, I need to be like, I'm going to be looking at it completely differently, thinking like, I'm just an email address, aren't I? No, that's cool. So one other thing I was going to touch on, going back a little bit, but sort of related to the tech side of things, I guess when I started working on Chiron projects, they were, like you said, sort of like different POCs and stuff. And a lot of them hooked into like Zapier and other tools like that, which I feel like partially it's just my awareness, but I think the quote no code sort of movement there's taken root a lot more than it had even when we were doing this.
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious, like now you know how to write your own code, but you've always kind of dabbled in connecting stuff that's already out there or avoiding, you know, avoiding having to write code. How are those two things coming together in your mind and also in the platform?
Yeah, no, great, Great question. I mean, that it was sort of tools like Zapier that kind of got me moving down this path of like, you know what, I can actually build some stuff without, you know, needing to write code. And now, you know, now that I can write code, I'm able to, you know, do a ton more. So yeah, I mean, it's been fun. I mean, I'm still using, you know, some of those techniques where appropriate for sure. But yeah, a lot of it now too is like, you know, hey, if I can do something in the Rails app, I feel like I have a lot more control over it that way. Oftentimes I'm opting for that. It just feels like I have a lot more flexibility. But yeah, I mean, it was kind of cool. Like, you know, sort of your hybrid, a few of the projects we worked on together were sort of hybrid stuff that I had built pieces of it with like Zapier and other tools. And then, oh, this one part, well, I need to do a database lookup here, whatever. And like, okay, this really, you know, this really belongs, you know, as some Rails controller code, but doesn't need, it can be super, super lightweight. So yeah, it's been fun to sort of continue doing that. But man, oh man, it just really feels liberating to sort of have taken the next step to be able to.
Yeah, totally. I mean, having the power, obviously you have to figure out when the right time to use it. And there is a cost, as you'll find, like there's, and probably already have, like there's a cost, like every line of code is like, now you have to manage it. But it's, you know, it gives you so much flexibility. But it's been interesting for me too, because we've kind of incorporated more of those since, like when we first started, it was just pure Rails app pretty much with, yeah, pretty simple. But over time, we've incorporated more of those things like Zapier, Typeform, stuff like that, to kind of finding that balance between like, oh, I can, if someone signs up, you know, puts their email in on our landing page, like instead of handling the form submission and doing all this stuff, I could just like post it to a Zap and then like just do whatever from there. Like things like that. I'm finding little areas to like outsource some of the stuff, especially things that'll change a lot with like business changes as opposed to things that are kind of fundamental to the technology itself. But
right. Yeah. I've been doing a lot of that. Especially too, like as, I mean, you're essentially a one full-time engineer organization, right?
I guess, yeah, we didn't talk about that, but we have three engineers now. Well, me and two other people.
Okay, awesome.
So we had someone start full-time last July, August.
Okay, nice.
And then we had someone start like February, March, who's doing a lot more than just coding, so isn't like 100% code. But yeah, for the first 2.5 years, it was basically just me. And now it's still, we're trying to keep the team as small as we can. So it's good to like, we keep the technology stacks simple like we talked about, and then kind of use those ways to like let other people help manage, like, oh, if we need to send it to MailChimp versus Intercom versus whoever, like I don't have to go deploy code to change that. So
yeah, that's awesome. And that was part of the idea again of like, okay, you know, to what extent, you know, can you use sort of off the shelf tools that are really, really, really good, you know, and not have to build a lot of that stuff from scratch, right? Like that, you know, the balance you always have to strike though, right, is like, can you get that user experience right? Even using, you know, some of these third party tools.
Yeah. The other thing I always think about is, and this is a topic for another day, but it's like legacy. Everyone talks about like legacy code and code debt, but no one really talks about like, it's, I guess it's too early, but no one talks about no code debt, which is a thing. Like,
sure.
Once you're like locked into a certain handful of Zaps, like there is some sort of, you know, oh, that third party API changed, and now I have to go like change all these things that are actually running without breaking stuff. And I don't know.
Yep.
But yeah, hopefully you won't run into too much of that, and your code is probably perfect, 100% tested, and I'm sure it's beautiful.
Oh, you know, gosh. So,
well, awesome. I know we're here at the hour mark, so we probably should wrap here, but anything else you want to share on your journey that we didn't cover? I feel like we covered a fair amount of ground there.
Yeah, I think we covered the main stuff. Yeah, I mean, the biggest takeaway for me for all of this is like having at least some amount of, you know, kind of technical expertise on the founding team. That was, you know, that was one of the things coming out of my last company that I was like, I do not want to start another, you know, technology company without that, you know, kind of truly in the DNA of the founding team. And then, you know, the other stuff we talked about in terms of, you know, really, really running lean and mean, and having that, you know, clear path to sustainability. you know, I feel a lot more confident this time around having, you know, a couple of those pieces in place. So,
yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I'm selfishly excited to see you going that route. At least I know, like, using money as like a means to an end, as opposed to like the fuel tank that you have to keep filling up. So,
right.
I mean, again, I don't have direct experience, but I just have to imagine it. If you can pull it off, it's got to be a lot more liberating to operate that way. So,
yeah, totally.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I'm excited to, I guess, see you guys kind of take off in Austin and ultimately expand over to Atlanta, so we can use it, because that would be very nice to have. So hurry up.
Yeah, give us a little bit of time to figure some things out, and then we'll be over there. Don't worry.
Awesome. Well, hey, thanks for hopping on. And I guess people can find you on...
People can find me on LinkedIn and, you know, find Modern Pediatrics just on the web. Just Google us and you'll find us there.
Google it. Look for some Zoom classes.
That's right.
Especially anyone in Austin. So awesome. Well, thanks, Andy, and good luck, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Kyle.
Yep.